morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today at this early start of Hashtag No Limits. I'm very excited to share my guest with you today, but I have to do all the businessy things first. So let me get through that first. So as I said, this is Hashtag No Limits. I'm your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For anyone who doesn't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it has to reform into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, then it has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go. I can't believe that any of that is easy, but neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. Today, I have Lori Bell with me. She has become a friend over the past few years. We are both authors, and she helped me do some stuff with my book, and I gave her a little bit of advice of what to help with her son. And from there, it just took off. And so I'm very excited. Lori, welcome. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, thank you. I appreciate this invitation. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So a couple more businessy things that I forgot to do is just to say that if you are watching, please let us know in the comments with either a hashtag live and where you're from or just a hello and where you're from. And there we go. We've got our first one. Mary, thank you for listening. Glad to have you here. I imagine that, Lori, you're going to know a lot of the people that are watching today. I was watching your Facebook post from the other day, and you have a ton of fans.
I think it's Connor the bear. He's the one that has the fan club, not me.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's both. So I'm guessing Judy Zizit is...
She's my mom. I'll blame her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we've got Stephanie watching. Good morning.
Hi, Stephanie.
We have Elizabeth Diders watching. Good morning. We have Lori Campworth watching. Good morning. Melissa Nettemeyer, hello. Kelly Diders, Fran Smith, how are you? Look at this. We have tons of people joining us this morning. This is so awesome. Good morning, Lynn. We have Kelly Todd, hello. And we have Terry Lepker. So welcome, everybody. I know you're not here to listen to me speak, so we're going to get into Lori's story. Lori, tell us a little bit about your background, and then we're going to talk about the bear.
Okay. I've described myself before as a former journalist turned author, and somewhere in between, I became an autism mom. My son's name is Connor. He's 17 years old, and I always like to describe him as his physical shell is a teenager, but his spirit is a little boy. And I feel that he's always going to be that way. I've accepted that he's always going to be that way. So we just live it one day at a time. He's not high functioning. He's considered to be nonverbal, but believe me, there's phrases and there's words that tell us exactly what he wants and needs. And I think one of the hardest things raising him is his social anxiety. It limits us to what we can do, where we can go. He is really afraid of everything outside of his element. And it's not really something we can adjust to by doing time and again. It's just who he is. So in a way, we do keep him in a bubble, but I think it's a happy bubble.
Yeah. Well, and from the things that I've seen on your Facebook posts and from the conversations we've had, I would agree with you that he's pretty happy. One of the things that I have noticed that you've started doing with him recently, and not just with him, but with your family, is you have a new camper.
Yes. Now it's a camper van. So we have started out slowly. We're doing day trips. My husband is convinced that there will be overnight trips. I don't know if that ever happened, but as far as taking it on day trips, it's been wonderful because there's anything from pulling up into a parking lot and being parked next to someone who's still in their car. He's looking out his window. He's worried about that. We always show up somewhere looking where we can go to be isolated. And this camper van is just, it's great because he's a home on wheels. He's not really worried about what's outside the window because he's busy doing so much else inside. He's distracted. And we still pull it off, you know, in the middle of nowhere and have a picnic lunch or whatever, but he just feels a little bit more at ease. So whether it becomes an actual camping, you know, van, I don't know, maybe just for my husband, but you know, that's what you know, it's a guy thing, but he really does enjoy it. So yeah, we're getting there. We're doing different things. We're doing things that meet his needs at the same time.
Yeah. So you said that you were a journalist, turned stay-at-home mom, turned autism mom. So talk about what you were doing, what you were covering as a journalist, and how, if any of that, has helped you in investigating kind of how to work with Connor.
That's a good question, because I started out in print journalism. For 6 years, I worked for the O'Fallon Progress newspaper, which is a sister newspaper to the Belleville News Democrat. And I was the education reporter. So I went around to 12 different schools in the Shiloh and O'Fallon area, worked with kids a lot, saw a lot of differences. You know, I've always enjoyed kids. I've never had any experience with special needs, to be honest. But I think just the investigative reporting, the feature stories have prepared me to talk to people, to do some serious like FBI digging to figure out what was wrong with my son when he was a baby. I remember one time we were at a developmental pediatrician and I had written a summary. This is my kid. This is what he's doing. You know, help me. And the doctor came in and she's like, I read over your summary. Are you in the medical field? And I'm like, no, I'm just a journalist. But, you know, I was just able to get the information down, you know, the descriptives and everything. You know, there's a reason I think I have that background, because I described him perfectly to the professionals, and hopefully we helped him little by little during that time as well.
Yeah. So will you talk about that a little bit, that about what things you were noticing, and then about the age of when he was diagnosed with autism?
So Connor has a sister and she's 26 months older, and she met all the milestones early and she was just the easiest baby. So along comes Connor and nothing was happening, you know, but you're not supposed to compare your kids. You know, you're told all the time, but everyone's different, you know, just relax.
Right.
He was very fussy, extremely fussy, which is how he got the name the bear very, very early. But he was 5 months and there were some red flags. And one of them was he couldn't sit up on his own. If you would sit him on the floor, he would throw himself back. There was no sitting and playing and exploring, just flat on his back all the time. So at the pediatrician for his checkup, she noticed that. And I'm proactive. But at the time I'm like, okay, this isn't a big deal. She's not going to say anything. And I'm not either, because it was scary. And she's like, he can't sit up on his own. He's so rigid. He's throwing himself back. And I'm, you know, I can hear my own heartbeat in my ears. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, it does seem to be a problem. And she's like, let's try some physical therapy for that. And the physical therapy worked within weeks. She just, you know, showed me the different moves and such to do with him when I was home with him. And he did pick up right away. But then that led from one thing to the next. Then we were doing developmental, occupational, speech. And when I was told that he needed more, I thought, well, it's going to be just as quick as physical. We'll be all right. She'll show me what to do at home and we'll be moving forward, meeting those milestones. And then that's when it all started to sink. You know, this is not going to happen for him. I can try, you know, we can maybe meet a few things, baby steps, literally baby steps, but I'm dealing with something here. And what's interesting when you have a child that small is they're not going to say there's something wrong with them, because they don't know. It could be severe developmental delay that eventually catches up and everyone moves on. But in, you know, in that case, I was always questioning, and they were always saying, no, let's just wait and see. And, it, you know, it got to the point where when he finally got his diagnosis at age 4, I made the appointment and asked for it. This, I need him diagnosed. I need to start getting more help, you know, because by then he was in early childhood education in school, and you got to have a diagnosis to get more help. So I asked for that.
And how was his school experience at the early stages? I know it's going to change as he goes on, and we'll talk about that in bits, but how was the early stage school experience?
The early experience at age 3 and age 4 was a complete nightmare. It was just awful. There, he wasn't understood. I could go on and on. The teacher ended up leaving. We ended up getting another teacher in there at age 5. It started to improve. And by the time he went to kindergarten and first grade, he was ruling the classroom. He was the bear that the other kids fed their snacks to. And now he was in the regular ed classroom by then. And he was disruptive.
Okay.
So I remember at the end of first grade, and I remember they all loved him, but it was time. And I was told, you know what, we might want to consider Bass. We might want to consider moving him to Belleville, where there's professionals, you know, on hand all the time and that will understand autism, put him in an autism classroom. So I went and just kind of looked around and explored a little bit. And the lady that I was with from Westland, she said, isn't this awesome? And I said, no, it's not going to be awesome for me until it works for Connor. I need something to work for Connor. And, you know, what I had lived so far with him was anything that worked for anyone else wasn't working for him. So I just kind of lost a little faith in, you know, let's follow the leader. And I think it was there that I learned, you know, we're on our own path. If you meet one child with autism, you've met one child. I mean, I've got an authentic original here. So that's just, you know, kind of what I learned from that experience as well.
Yeah. So when you say that it was awful, as an educator, that breaks my heart, because that's always been my goal is, you know, that every child is able to come to school and that the parent feels comfortable sending their child to school and that, you know, we have communication if something is off or something needed, you know, that I needed to tell the parents. And I feel that I was able to do that with the majority, if not all of the parents that I ever worked with. And I don't think they had awful experiences, but I think what you're saying is it wasn't necessarily staff members that made it difficult. It was just this, them trying to figure out Connor.
Yes and no, because some, you know, I live in Clinton County. Everyone knows everyone. And they would reach out to me and it wasn't all staff, but it was some staff. It was some, and this is Clinton County. I cannot get in too much detail because everyone will say, I know who that is. But, you know, teachers for a long time in a particular classroom get set in their ways. And we just needed someone to be a little bit more open to trying new things. And I mean, it ended up working out. We had a rough start, but you know, it got better every year. I do think that it got better every year after that.
Good, good. And Fran says she's glad you got early intervention. Do you think how key do you think it was getting that early intervention?
I think many times people have a story where they can say, if we wouldn't have had that, he or she would not have advanced as they did. I don't feel like the early intervention really advanced my boy. I just think that it kept everyone in this house proactive and just in the fact that, you know, that you tried, he's going to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. And yes, he has advanced by leaps and bounds, but did the early intervention really change things? I don't know. With Connor, I can't say because there hasn't been a lot of progress. But I think as far as just knowing as a parent, I did all I could. You know, I don't have regrets. So it had helped. It helped me probably more than him. I mean, I had four therapists in my house a week driving him a little bit crazy. He just wanted to be a baby. He didn't want to work hard. Right. But like I said, it all worked out.
So you had four therapists. So you've said PT, you've said OT. What were the other two therapists?
Developmental, okay. And then as he got a tad older, speech.
Okay.
So at
speech
one point,
didn't come until he was older. That's
I would think by the time, yeah, he was reaching a year, I believe, when speech came. And I started the therapy at like 5 or 6 months with them. So I don't think they really expected that early, or maybe they just didn't want to overwhelm me. But yeah, by the time he was a year, we did have. And then by the time he was almost three, the developmental pediatrician that we went to, you know, she talked to us and what's going on. And she said, stop all therapy. She said, just stop all of it. He's overwhelmed. And she said, I don't know. The pushing is making him regress possibly. So just stop. And so I brought everyone together and I'm like, okay, everybody's fired. And they, you know, then I explained. And they're like, well, you know, this has happened before. You know, we do understand. And then it was amazing because within a matter of months, everyone just relaxed, Connor included. And there were little baby steps and there was just more, I don't know. Like I said, he finally got to be a baby and to be a toddler without pressure. And that's how he is at 17 years old. If you pressure him, you're getting nowhere. So that's kind of amazing to me. He hasn't changed much in that regard either.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful statement of, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism. Because to hear, as you saw my reaction to stopping all therapies, that's very different.
Yeah.
I've not really heard that before.
Well, it was alarming, but it was a relief. It really was, because I loved all the therapists. I talked to them all the time when they were here, questions and concerns. But I think we all knew we were spinning our wheels. And the chance that, hey, if we all just stop and relax, what happened? What's going to happen? You know, maybe he will progress on his own terms. And he did. He really did.
That's
so
awesome.
Never be alarmed when everyone says, you know, the therapists are all fired, because it worked for us in a way.
Yeah. And so listening to the experts, but at the same time, I'm presuming that you were trusting your gut as well.
Yeah. I remember one of the therapists actually said to me, you have to feel this in your heart. Whatever you're doing with him, you need to feel it in your heart. Okay. And there were times I'm like, okay, you know, I need to know. And that made a lot of sense. And I still go with that today. A lot of decisions that, you know, have to be made for him. I think, all right, this feels right. Or, you know, it usually does. But sometimes it takes time.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So at some point you started writing. Were you writing before he was born, or did you start after he was born?
Well, after he was born, there was absolutely nothing, no time to do anything. He was so high maintenance. What had happened was when Bailey was born 26 months before that, I went part-time. So I was still writing stories, reporting a tad bit from home. And when Connor arrived, I had to quit completely. I'm like, I can't leave him with anyone for one. He's a nightmare. He just cried all the time. And he was so stiff and rigid, and there just wasn't anything you could do to entertain him or calm him. So I ended up, forgot the question.
When did you start writing?
When did I start writing? Okay, well, I've always been a writer, and I was, you know, a journalist. And I said, I think a lot of journalists say, I have a book in me. I know that I have a book in me. And I thought, someday I'm going to write a book. Well, I went through crazy with Connor, the therapist, getting him in school. The crazy continued. So there was just no time to concentrate. And then when we transferred him from the Westland School District to Belleville, that's when I started to have a little time to relax. I wasn't getting as many phone calls. I wasn't worrying as much. It was like, okay, we got this. And I thought, you know what? I need to do something for me. I don't want to be known as just Connor's mom and Bailey's mom. I need an escape. So my neighbor had given me a couple of books to read. There was a no-name author, and I picked it up. And in that book, the author had written about an older woman. She had lived a full life. And at one point in her life, she went through something. And it said she just wanted to feel what it was like to let the seams out. To let the seams out. And I'm like, I want to feel what it's like to let the seams out. You know, I want to know, I want to relax. I want to just, like I said, escape. So I'm like, I'm writing a book. So I started in August when Connor started in a different school. He was actually, it was in Belleville at the time. And I finished in December. And then it was the process of work. How can I get this published? I had a few friends read it or what. And it wasn't even about success. I'm, you know, I made it. I wrote my first book. I'm an author. It was the feeling I got from it. I haven't thought about him in hours. You know, I'm so involved in this story. And this is some creativity coming out again that I hadn't felt in a while. So it was just a feeling that I didn't want to lose. So 36 books later, here I am.
And that's so awesome. So there's a few things that you said in there that I want to kind of pull out on and talk about a little bit more. One of the things that you said was, once you got him into a school that was understanding him a little bit better, you could relax because you weren't getting all the phone calls. So that's a limit that was busted right there, because you were able to start to have a life that revolved around Lori a little bit and involved Lori more. And it wasn't just all about Connor. So how often were you getting those kinds of phone calls, and how scary was it for you to send him? Cause we're talking about 30 minutes away. Did he go on a bus or was he in a car? What kind of trust does that require from a mom who had been literally attached to him for so long?
Still attached to him. I the phone calls and the texts and stuff were a lot of concerns and questions and, you know, what should we do? Do you have any advice? And which was completely fine because I'm a control freak. You know, what would Lori do? Well, here, this is what she would do. And so I didn't mind that to some extent, because then I knew what was happening. I still had that worry, you know, when he was at Westland, and I still was not riding. But when I had the chance to escape and get that riding in, that's when I started to not worry as much. But the initial sending him was terrifying. It was terrifying. There's a couple of things. My dad is the bus driver.
Okay.
So that helped a tad, knowing that, you know, that he at least had someone that he knew. And I also knew the individual care aide on the bus, because Bailey had her in the classroom through kindergarten for another little girl. So there was some trust there, because I knew the people transporting him could at least get him there. As far as not knowing anyone, and I still go through that today when people quit, people move on, and then he has new individual aides come into his life. I have to trust. It's not always easy. I make myself known. This is who I am, and this is my phone number, and I want a report at the end of the day. You know, I want to know who he's with, what's going on, you know. And now he still gets on the bus, but I pick him up midday because he's not lasting longer than 12:30 daily. And I talk to people when I get there, you know, how was his day, what's going on? And I just develop trust with people. Sometimes you have to force it, you know, you have to force yourself to trust, and then just put yourself out there. And I've never been afraid to speak up. So, and I have to for him, because he's not going to come home and say, wow, you know, this is what happened at school today. Sometimes he will say, what a day. And I'll be like, oh boy. But you know, yeah, but and I do know what happens every day. And I, you know, it's been a while now. It's been 10 years, I guess, since he's been out of his home district. So, and we've had some great people come and go. And for me, that's heartbreaking. When I have someone that I know he gets to school and he loves and trusts, and then that person leaves for one reason or another after a year or two or more, it's heartbreaking, because I can't explain it to him. So-and-so will not be there, because he doesn't understand. He has to arrive and learn to trust new people, just like I have to stay back to some extent and learn to trust new people.
Yeah. And I can't imagine how difficult that is. I mean, I have an idea, but to fully comprehend it, I would have to walk in your shoes, and I can't obviously do that. I remember when you first reached out to me, the reason you reached out to me was because of the individual care aide switching, and the school was wanting to switch the aide. And it was, you know, you were like, this isn't going to work for him. This is going to be horrible for him. How much better is he, or is he better at making that adjustment when a new teacher comes in, or that new para comes in, or the, you know, whatever those new people are, whatever realm they play in his life?
He's not any better now than he was then. It's still a process of, you know, he's clamming up and he's not himself until sometimes, you know, they'll tell me weeks later, wow, he really showed us, you know, his personality today, because he's so anxious. So it's not any better than now than it was then. But I do have a story about, he had male individual care aides at Westland, and they were just wonderful with him. He related to men, and, you know, they were a little bit, you know, stronger to handle him. He was a buster, still is. And when he arrived in Belleville, they told me, he's not going to have the same individual care aide. That's not how we do it. He's not going to get used to one person. We're going to switch people almost, you know, daily. And I'm like, this is not Connor. I can guarantee you this is not going to work. Well, they did it. And I kept telling myself, let's just sit back and see what happens. Well, after 1 year, there was summer school. And I sent Connor to that summer school. And he worked with a male. He had not had a male there, only at Westland. And this guy was wonderful, just wonderful. He sent me a letter at the end of summer. He's like, if you ever need help with your son, he's like, I just formed a connection with him. I want you to know that, you know, I see his potential. And no one had ever really said that before. So I said I wanted him. It didn't work out. We got a couple other people switching around again with him that second year in Belleville. And then they took a field trip and they went to I think it was a movie theater. And they had various buses from other schools as well. Well, this particular male aide was on one of the other buses. And he was with another child, you know, standing near the door, the entrance. Connor gets off the bus with his current aide, whoever he had at the time, and he took off. And he doesn't take off. He's too scared. So one of the other individual care aides said, let him go. He doesn't do this. Let's just see where he's going. He walked all the way across the lot or wherever he was up to that particular guy and stood next to him as if to say, I'm with him. And then that man at the time, he goes, this should tell you all something. You know, he's meant to be with me for a while. And it was years he spent with him. I don't know if I have the exact year amount, maybe 6 years with him, almost to high school. So, yeah, so that, so a story like that is like, you know, there's angels out there. Their wings are tucked behind their back, but they're out there. So that gave me serious faith in people that I have to trust because they do end up loving him. They do end up seeing that crazy little personality he has. So, yeah, that was, that's a fun story.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I just want to share, there's been a few more people that have jumped on. So Bailey's very proud of you. And your mom says too. And we have Phyllis Millant who has joined us. I don't know if I saw her earlier. And then we have Sharon Wibbles who said she was watching and says that you're awesome.
She's the birthday girl. Happy birthday, Sharon.
Oh, happy birthday, Sharon. That's awesome. Thanks for joining us on your birthday.
Yeah.
So the other thing that, I wanted to pull out from what you said before was the self-care piece. You talked about, you know, that, once he was in school and you weren't getting those calls and those texts, you know, and you, could breathe, I think is, that's not how you worded it, but I think that's kind of the sense. And so you found something for yourself to do and you've continued to do it. I think that there are a lot of moms who don't do the self-care piece, and that's what I'm calling your writing, because I really think that's what it is. So can you elaborate more about that and talk about why that is so incredibly important in order for you to be the best you can be in order to help Connor be the best Connor he can be?
I think for any parent, when you fly somewhere, they tell you to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. That's hard. It's hard not to say, okay, my child needs this before me. I always put my kids first, but I also know the importance of just feeling strong and being able to do the same thing day in and day out. Without, if I don't think if I didn't have the escape to write, I would have to find something else because it's my sanity. Unfortunately, there's so many times when special needs kids, their parents snap, you know, and I understand that. But I also, you know, in my mind, I overrule that with what's important here. If you feel good, you're going to be able to make your kids feel good. And Connor especially feeds off of me, my emotion. If I'm down, if I'm depressed, you know, he's not going to understand that. If I'm sad, he doesn't understand the tears. There were many nights after I put him to bed, I was on the treadmill crying because things have to come out eventually. You have to hit rock bottom, but you can't stay there. You just can't. You have people counting on me. Life and the life's experiences, I think anybody can tell you. I went through that and I never thought I would recover. But, you know, it's up to you to recover, to help yourself recover. There's plenty of people that are ready and they're reaching out, but you have to know what you can do to get up and just move forward. And you have to have something or someone to do it. You have to have a purpose. And I think he will always, you know, be my purpose because he needs me. He's going to need me now, you know, as much as in 20 or 30 years from now. And it's important to me getting older to feel strong, just, you know, because I just don't want to not be able to do what he needs me to do. And on a daily basis, it's tiring.
Yeah.
I hope I answered your question.
You did. Yeah. I do want to ask, though, when you were really in the throes of it, when he was in the early grades, and yes, you trusted the school, you sent him to school. What kind of self-care did you do then? Or did you do self-care at all?
At that time, I had more time than I do now. I had from like 7 a.m. to almost 4 o'clock. So the main thing for me was walking. I would take off as soon as the bus left or as soon as I got Bailey off to school as well after him, because he leaves early, and I would walk. I would walk like 4 miles a day. And that just started my day, because I knew I had done something to take care of myself, you know, fresh air, just, you know, just kind of like a release all around. But yeah, I can't do that anymore. I'm on the treadmill at night after Connor's in bed. I just don't have that time. I have to be in Belleville by 12:30 every day. But that's when it kicked off for me. I'm like, this is good. This is for me, course, you have your phone in your hand. You get calls sometimes and you're running, you know, trying to race home to get to him. There's been problems on the bus. There's been problems as soon as he's gotten to school. Now I continue to have my phone on me all the time because you just don't know. There's plenty of times I'm like, I'm going to get this done today. A dentist appointment, I got a call in the middle of it. You know, try that. Okay, can you please hurry up because, you know. So, yeah, and it's just, you just never know. I always live with some type of urgency. I need to get this done just in case. And I know that's not probably the best thing, but that's who I am. I need to get this done just in case he needs me.
Right. And Lynn says you're a true inspiration to so many people. And I agree. And, you know, I have to tell the audience that are watching today that it took convincing for me to get Lori to believe that her story was worth telling. She has been like, why does anybody want to hear my story? And this is from an author who has over 36 books. And we're going to talk about the next book that's coming out in a little bit. But you didn't believe that people were interested in your story or
you remember what I said? I said, it's just me.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel. It's just me. And I mean, there's so many other more interesting people out there. We all will agree on that. But I've always said, Connor needs a purpose. What's his purpose? This seems so unfair. He was robbed of a normal life. And when I say normal, what's normal? But yet he's not 17. He's not enjoying the, you know, the teenager thing. So I've always said, what is his purpose? It just seems unfair to him. And then it dawned on me that, you know, his purpose is to be here to teach us. And maybe through him, I can help others. I think that that's a pretty powerful purpose. And don't get me wrong, he is happy. He has everything he needs in this world. He really probably has it easier than most 17-year-olds, you know, because he's getting what he wants on a daily basis. He's safe and loved. So the purpose is, I think I'm doing it for him. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do to help others because he's a challenge, but he has taught me more than I've ever would realize could have happened because he's changed me. There's compassion I've never had before. And he has a sister that, you know, has taught me things as well. She grew up knowing that her brother had trouble. She used to say he has trouble. And she would go to school and if there would be another child, she'd come home and say, they have trouble too, like Connor. And she wanted to help. So, you know, she taught me a lot of the acceptance came from her. You know, this is how he is. This is my brother. And instead of watching mom wanting to change him and fix him and just get through it, you know, I had a little girl not much older than him saying, why? You know, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm going to ask you the question. You've said it a couple times. He's taught you so many things. What are some of the types of things that he's taught you?
I think the main thing is the little things matter. We're all so worried about the big picture, but it's the little day-to-day things that leave you fulfilled and happy. You know, if you go to sleep with a smile on your face, and you tuck him in at night, that kid's just cracking up. You know, he's just had a good day. So he's taught me that what it's about is the little thing. You know, we all strive to be bigger and better, and we should, but it's also about just the day to day. What makes me happy? What keeps me afloat? And, you know, I try to live by that.
That's awesome. So that is something in my book, Those Who Can't Teach, that I wrote at the end of each chapter. If you don't know, my book is true stories about special needs families to promote acceptance, inclusion, and empathy. And the reason it's Those Who Can't Teach is because like Connor, like your family, people have said to those in my book, well, you can't have a happy life. You can't go on vacation. And then to the student themselves, you can't read, you can't run, you can't behave that way, so on and so forth. But when I opened my heart to all of the students that I ever taught and the families and friends that are in the book that I know, I learned so much from the individual and from their family. And so at the end of each chapter, I list some of those things out as to this is what I learned from this individual in their family. And it truly is it's a beautiful thing because the things that we do worry about are really not the things that are important oftentimes. You know,
the worry in either direction is not going to make a difference. You can drive yourself crazy with worry, but things are going to work out as they're supposed to. You're not going to change the outcome. And I also learned that from him. I've worried about that for months, you know, and why? It's stress. So it's not going to change the outcome.
Right. Yeah. That's stress. And I just wanted to pop Sharon's comment out the, up there about Bailey being the sweetest girl. So just wanted to give Bailey
Thank you. Little shout out.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about the fact that you have 36 books out right now.
I'm currently writing 37.
You're currently writing 37. And then after a little bit of time after 37, do you want to talk about what?
Yeah, I can talk about it. Yeah. Okay. What's interesting is just being a fiction writer, you know, fun, entertaining stories. All along, I've been asked, are you going to write a book about Connor? Are you going to write a book about Connor? And my answer was always, I'm not ready. This is my escape. I don't want to get back into that world. Where would my escape be if I'm writing and reliving? And then that was my answer. And I just, maybe someday, that's what I would say. And I don't really know what happened. Partly when I met with you, we were talking about other autism moms that have blogs and that have written books. And I kind of have a mini blog with the Facebook, with, you know, the following that I have, the Bear Stories. And you said, you know what? You could do the same thing. You could be like those women. You could write a book because you already do it in the short story form. And it really, it hit me. I thought, you know what? I could. And maybe it is time because I feel like so many people read my posts and they're entertaining and they're also real and raw. And I think maybe they want a little bit more to learn from, to pass on to someone else they know, because we all know someone that has autism. So I just thought maybe, I think it's time. I think I should take the summer when it's a little bit more relaxed because I have Connor with me. And I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but the running to go get him, you know, does take up a lot of time. And the worry of, you know, what he's doing, where he's at. When he's right here, I get more done. So anyway, I'm like, I think I'm going to write this book on Connor. And then I told my husband that. And what was funny is a while back, years back, I said, I don't know, should I write a book about this? And he goes, who's going to want to read that? Because we had been going through so much. And he's like, it's just too stressful and too... He's like, I just don't see that would be interesting. So then this time when I said it, like, you know, almost maybe 15 years later, he's like, oh, that would be awesome. You could reach a lot of people. You could help people, you know, do something different with your writing, personal. So then this is another story. I've written 36 books and the title of the book comes to me before I even start writing. So I hadn't had a title. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this because I don't have a title. And Bailey's like, well, maybe it should be something with Bear. And I go, I don't know. I said, not everyone knows that he's Bear. And is it too cutesy? And I just said, I don't know. And then a couple of days went by. And one of my close friends, she texted me. And she's like, I've been thinking about this, that you're going to write a book. And I'm just so excited. And then she ended that text in quotes. And she said, Bear with me. She gave me the title.
Oh,
and I immediately was like, that's it. We've been bearing with this kid for years. So I said, that's it. And then it'll have some type of subtitle, like, you know, a family's journey with autism, because this is a family on this journey. It's not just me as his mom talking about him and, you know, being an advocate. This is his family. This is his sister who someday will probably have to take some responsibility for him. This is his dad who handles Connor altogether different than I do, in a way that I've learned from, in a way that I've gotten frustrated with. And then, of course, it's me who can put all of this into words. So Bear with me, a family's journey with autism. And that will be late summer when I should have that done.
And you're going to come back.
Yeah, I can come back to talk about it.
And we're going to tell a little bit more about it, and we're going to promote it that way. So we've got Cindy here saying she's always thought you could just put all your posts together and how many people that could help. And then she agreed that Bailey is a special person, so empathetic and just a great human.
Thank you.
So I do want to talk a little bit about that sibling relationship. I've had a couple of siblings on throughout the live stream over the years. And what has been your, and you mentioned it before, that, you know, she's just always been like, he's my brother, you know, And you don't have, I don't know if you can, you can look at other families and kind of compare their typically developing children to yours. But tell us a little bit about that relationship between Bailey and Connor.
He adores her. He would do absolutely anything for her. And she is just a little mother to him. She always has been. There's things that she can get him to do that I can't. It's just that trust that he has with her. I can remember when COVID arrived and the school shut down and we were supposed to do remote learning with Connor. And I'm like, this is not happening. So the teacher sent over some pages that he could color. And I could not get him to color. He was not having it. Well, I left for a few minutes to run uptown and I got a picture. Bailey had him at the table coloring. And I'm just like, you know, there's just something about her that he's like, yeah, she's my sister. I'll do it for her, but not for my mom. You know, there's just, and there's a compassion there. There's more patience. She definitely has more patience with him than I do. I'm more of the drill sergeant. She's, you know, the fun. Oh, we'll get this done, but we're going to have fun. Yeah, it's just, it's so neat to see someone just be raised in a home where, you know, there is a little trouble. There is a lot of, there, she has had to make some sacrifices. My husband and I have had to separate so many times and tag team things. You take Bailey, I've got Connor, or, you know, vice versa. It's just, or I show up at a sporting event because Bailey played 3 sports through school. We were busy. And, you know, I wanted to be a part of that, but it was difficult because I had a kid that went to bed by 7 o'clock every night. And, you know, he was up at 4 a.m. and it's just, it was difficult to be everywhere I needed to be. So I felt like Bailey gave me that compassion as well. Mom, I get it. I want you to be able to take care of Connor. So yeah, she's taught me quite a bit.
That's awesome. And I'm really glad that you mentioned that it is a family's journey, because so often I think we, because moms are the main cog in the wheel, but it is in most cases a family activity, you know. And I'm really pleased to hear that Bailey was able to do multiple sports, because sometimes when there is a child that has the extensive needs that it sounds like Connor has, then the other child or children often don't have other opportunities. And so I'm glad that you were able to make that work. And I'm going to go way back really quickly. When he was first diagnosed with the autism, what was that like for you? And what was that like for your husband? And that for Bailey, I'm not going to ask because she was, you know, he's my brother.
Yeah, nothing changed with Bailey. My husband's very quiet. He keeps a lot of, you know, emotions inside. Again, I told you that when we went to the developmental pediatrician, I asked for the diagnosis. I need it. I want this. And he does have it. He said, you know, we'll call it mild to moderate autism, you know, just to get through this paperwork and stuff and get him some extra help at school. So I can remember that I put him in little khaki shorts and a powder blue polo shirt. And he had little sandals and his feet were so chubby that I just shoved those sandals. You know, he had to look the part. And we were walking away and I was carrying him and he was such a buster. And I don't know what was stinging more, the muscles in my arms or the tears in my eyes. And I put him in the car seat and I unbuttoned his little khaki shorts at the top and I took off those sandals. And I'm like, you know what? I think it's just time to breathe a little. I think it's time to be more comfortable with everything, with who you are. You know, I didn't say this out loud, but I, of course, thought it to myself. And the kid hasn't worn khakis or a polo shirt since.
I so appreciate that, the rawness of that, though, because I, you know, what you said, like you thought this in your head, like it's just time to breathe. It's just time to, you didn't say it, but it's just time to accept Connor as Connor.
Well, and that's what the developmental pediatrician said. He said, now remember, you're leaving here with the same child that you came with. You know, a label's a label, but it's still the same child you've been dealing with all along. And that made sense. Yeah. I could handle it. I felt like I could handle it. You know, it wasn't anything different just because he was diagnosed that now what am I going to do? I had been doing it.
Right. Yeah. So I want to ask you, what is it that you, what's the reason that you agreed to be my guest today? What was it that you wanted to share about your family?
I think it's how well received the stories about Connor have been on Facebook. And it's not just, oh, you've opened my eyes. It's, wow, I just read that and I could relate on a totally different level because I had this going on. And I feel like maybe I can get through this in my own life. People are afraid to say how they feel sometimes. I'm not afraid. And sometimes it's like, wow, I can't believe she said that. Well, yeah, I said it because I feel that way. I'm human. You feel that way too. You just don't want to, you know, admit it or broadcast it. And that's okay. We all have something that we don't want to tell people about. We're not going to get on Facebook and write a post that, you know, we're just not. There's some things that are private. But for me with Connor, I don't keep a lot private because I think, you know what? It's isolating. It really is to just keep it all in. If I can somehow get it out there, it's a release for me and maybe a learning experience for someone else or just to make someone else feel a little bit better about what they're going through.
Yeah. So would you recommend that to other parents that they do share their experiences and not keep them all inside?
I think it depends on how they're able to share. You know, not everyone can put it into words. But hopefully everyone has someone in their lives where they can say, look, I need to sit down and talk about this. I need to get it out. It's so important to share it in some format. It really is. Definitely, you know, get it out because who wants to feel isolated? I know what it's like to feel isolated with having a child with special needs and someone else might feel that way with an illness or, you know, grieving. Anything can... You have to get it out. I mean, I would not have gotten through half of what I've gotten through without the help of other people just saying, you know, it's going to be okay. Or, you know, what happened today? So, yeah, you have to talk about it. You can't keep anything inside. Just find someone, find an outlet.
Yeah. So we have a few minutes left here today. And I want to, what have been your... And you mentioned a couple a minute ago, your biggest joys about having Connor.
I think my biggest joy with him is he's seeing, okay, we do keep him in a bubble because it's just so much easier. It keeps us sane. It keeps him happy. But the joy is when he does get out of that bubble and he does have to go places at times and other people see. He had a teacher during COVID and then not this year. She left. She moved. But she told me we finally saw his spirit. She goes, there was so much anxiety going on. But she goes, that boy and his spirit, she goes, I feel changed. He touches people. When you get to know this kid, he touches people. So just, and I know he's here for a reason. And when he makes other people feel like he makes us feel here, you know, in our bubble, it's important to share that. And it's so nice to know that other people see it and feel it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't had the opportunity to meet him in person. I've only learned about him through your Facebook posts. And yeah, I mean, just from what you're saying about him and those, I think he's a pretty awesome person. He has his preferences, like you said, you know, like he likes to eat outside.
Yes. I think part of that is he's very threatened by everyone sit down and have dinner together. The conversation bothers him. The laughter bothers him. Just the pressure of being at a table with other people, including his family. I don't know how many times we've said, Connor, we live here. You're fine. But he prefers to take his meals and go outside, sometimes on top of the playset, sometimes under the patio when it's raining, sometimes while he's swinging. He wants to be alone. He has some of that teenager independence, but yet he's looking at all the windows in the back of the house like, is my mom watching because I need more chips? You know, he prefers to eat outside. And sometimes he's been bundled up eating outside.
Yeah, you posted something the other day about this waitress gig is not all it's cracked up to be or something.
Climb up with a burger and fries and can I get more water? Oh, I'll be right back. So yeah, he's a piece of work.
Yeah. And I appreciate you and the words that you've used today, because I think what you said just a few minutes ago about the fact that you are honest, you are sharing those things because that's how you feel. I think sometimes people are afraid to share those raw emotions because they don't want others to feel justified in thinking that maybe a child who has a disability, that their life is too difficult to manage, or that they're not worth life, or that, you know, why would anybody ever put that amount of time into raising a child with disabilities? But I think it's very important to put those voices aside and really speak to the other moms and dads that are going through what you're going through, so that they know that what they're feeling is okay and it's typical and other people feel that way and they're not horrible for thinking that way. So I very much appreciate your rawness and your honesty today of saying things like, you know, he's a bear, he's a nightmare, he's had, you know, we've had these struggles, and to just be so honest. I very much appreciate that. And I hope that many of the people that don't know you personally that will be listening to this will feel that same connection to you and that appreciation for that honesty, and then not feel isolated, as you said, because I've spoken to so many parents of children with special needs that's what they say. Even if they're here in Clinton County, where, you know, there's all kinds of people. And like you said before, everybody knows everybody and we're all related to each other somehow. And but even in a community like that, there's so many parents who still feel alone. So I'm so appreciative again for all of that. And do you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, actually, that reminded me of, I had a young dad reach out to me not too long ago. Privately on Facebook, and he said, I can't handle this. He goes, and my son was just diagnosed. He's never going to play ball. He's never going to do this. And he's not going to be like my other son. He goes, I cry all the time. And he's like, did you ever have those experiences and how did you get through it? And I said, you know, when you have a newborn baby for the first time and that baby's counting on you for everything, your son's counting on you for everything, no matter how big he gets. He still needs to know someone's going to take care of me. My dad's got my back. And maybe he will play ball someday. You don't know that. He's too little yet. So, you know, baby steps, and you let those feelings out. Because, you know, this is a dad reaching out. That was new for me. You know, a lot of times men don't show their emotions or talk about it. That's how I live. You know, I have a quiet husband. He talks, but it's not like that. He wouldn't reach out to a stranger. And when he did, I'm like, you know what? You've got this. I said, it doesn't feel like it. And it's okay to have those days where it doesn't feel like it. But I said, remember, you know, he needs you. Just it's that feeling, brand new baby. You can't just walk away.
Right. That's awesome. So you are an author. You do have 36 books out. I do want to promote that for anybody who doesn't know you and is listening and has never heard of Lori Bell before. So talk a little bit about the style of your books, where they can get your books, and that sort of thing.
All of my books are available on Amazon for Kindle and in paperback. And basically my style, it's under the category of contemporary romance, but you're going to get a lot of deep feelings in some of the books, some soap opera style storylines and some really true to life storylines. A lot of what I've gone through has come out in my stories. I read a lot of different authors and I'm always thinking to myself, wow, they can get by with that. And we all have our own style. And I think my style is we don't have a lot of time to sit down and read. So do we want to waste the pages with descriptives and going on and on about nothing at all to have a book this thick? No, I just pretty much write where I want you to end a chapter and have to know what happens. I have people that read the book like in a 4-hour sitting because they're like, I need to know what's going to happen. It's just a lot of twists and turns, and I don't know how else to describe it. I just know that people are short on time and I want to entertain them just for a little while.
Yeah. So can people get your book through your website, or are they only?
Yeah, you can go through the website, which is actually a link to Amazon. So you can either way, directly to Amazon or my website. I always have copies at my house. They're available at the Trenton Public Library for purchase as well and to check out. So, and they're available to check out at Breeze Library too. But
awesome.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to read your website because this will become a podcast at some point. So not everybody can read what it says there. Lori Bell, author, and that's just LoriBell AUTHOR.com, and that will give you the link to a little bit more about Lori. If you didn't learn enough today, you can check that out and learn a little bit more about her. If you want to read more stories similar to Connor's, then go ahead and pick up my book, Those Who Can't Teach. But if you want to, and if you want to read Connor's real story and the full story, you're going to have to wait until the end of summer 23. We're in 23 now. only been here for 4 months. I'm still a little behind. but yeah, that'll be available as well. So final wrap up, any last words, anything that you would hope to say today that you haven't had opportunity to say yet?
I think just a thank you. Thank you for whoever's here listening, watching. Thank you to the people who just encourage me, whether it's because I've written a book that has entertained them over the years, or when I poured my heart out in a post about Connor because it had been a rough day, just those comments or those likes, it just, you know, it just makes me feel a lot less alone and like maybe I'm making a little bit of a difference. So if you have something to thank someone for, you should do it, because it's an amazing feeling when we make each other feel accepted and good about what we're doing in this life.
Yeah, absolutely. Lori, thank you so much. I'm very excited for Bear With Me and having you back in the fall and having you share about it and the journey of what, because that's really, I think, what I'm looking forward to is for you sharing the journey of what it was like writing it, because it is going to be, I think, a very different journey for you than all the other books that you have written. And so we've got a couple comments here. You're amazing, Lori. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. No, Lori, you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mom. So,
it's always nice to have moms be proud of
sure.
us, right? All right. Well, thank you. As Lori said, I want to also thank everyone who joined in today. I hope that you have enjoyed this. And all of my episodes are very similar to this one where, you know, I'm just getting those inspirational stories and helping everybody else understand different perspectives. So make sure that you subscribe to this channel so that you get those notifications of when I'm going live. And thank you, everybody, and have a great week. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.